The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So some of the questions today have been anticipating my talk. So I thought I would kind of recap everything and pull it all together. Basically, looking at the questions of what are the differences between concentration and mindfulness practice, and why would one want to have a concentration practice, and how does it support us in the overall path of practice? So, first thing I mentioned this morning is that the difference between two types of concentration, that there is a concentration that comes from this kind of one-pointed practice that we're exploring here today. It's just settle the mind on the breath, let go of anything not breath, and come back, come back, come back. That produces a very still kind of concentration. And then there's a concentration that comes with mindfulness practice, when we're cultivating a kind of mindfulness that can just be present for things as they're unfolding in our lives, whether it's on the cushion and we're sitting and just noticing that there's sound and there's body sensation and there's emotions and then there's body sensations, just kind of a flow of experience. That kind of concentration comes from the stability of the mindfulness, the stability of the awareness, not to get pulled off into thoughts about what's happening, but able to just meet the next thing, the next thing, the next thing, the next thing. So the one-pointed concentration that we've been cultivating today tends to lead to states of stillness. The concentration that's associated with mindfulness practice may or may not have that quality of stillness, that quality where everything becomes still, because that kind of concentration associated with changing experience, the experience can be quite dynamic. A lot of different things happening. It can feel like things are happening very quickly. And it feels anything but still. It can feel anything but still. But the awareness is stable. The awareness is still, in a way. So in concentration practice, one of the distinctions between concentration and mindfulness practice, in concentration practice, we come into paying attention to one experience, the breath, the breath, the breath, letting go of whatever is not breath. And in that exploration, the mind settles on the object of concentration, and it's not generally attuning to the specific experiences of, you know, the changing nature of that experience. So with the breath, as I mentioned earlier, you know, you could be paying attention to all the various many sensations that are happening in the breath, or just simply kind of a rhythm and a flow of the breath. The former would be more the use of the mindfulness practice with the experience of breathing. The latter, the concentration practice. What tends to happen in concentration practice, and this is something that may take some time to experience or to really see this clearly, but what tends to happen in concentration practice is the more that you stabilize on the one experience, the stillness of the mind's moving towards stillness means that the mind wants to settle on something that's very still. And the most still thing that the mind can come up with is a concept. And so what happens with concentration practice is that the mind ends up stabilizing on a concept. It ends up stabilizing on the idea of the breath rather than the actual experience of the breath. Now, this is a major distinction between concentration and mindfulness, that the concentration actually settles and deepens because concept can become very stable in the mind. This is something that our minds make use of a lot, actually, the fact that we can stabilize on concept. And that concept can become so stable that the mind can absorb into it. The mind can't absorb into changing experience. It can absorb into something that becomes steady and stable. And so this is a major difference between concentration practice and mindfulness practice. In concentration, we move towards less and less change, more and more stillness, very little in the way of changing experience. In mindfulness practice, we are interested in essentially recognizing the distinction between concept and actual experience, and are more interested in connecting with the actual lived experience rather than our ideas about it. So this unfolds through connecting with how our experience changes. So both kinds of concentration are helpful, actually. The stable kind of concentration. Why would one want to cultivate that stable kind of concentration? You know, it's it feels good. I mean, that's one reason. It kind of gives us a lovely break in our lives. As the mind can settle and stabilize on that experience, you know, it feels good. It feels good for a couple of reasons. One of the reasons that it feels good is because that stability of mind, the mind that can stay with that object of meditation, stay with that object of concentration, has to let go of the hindrances. It has to let go of sense desire. It has to let go of all the pulls to wanting pleasant things and wanting to get rid of unpleasant things. It has to let go of the pull into sleepiness or restlessness. It has to let go of doubt. And so the mind that becomes concentrated becomes secluded from the hindrances. And that feels really nice. Feels really good when the mind is not being pulled around by various thoughts and views and ideas and opinions and beliefs about what has to be done and what needs to happen. When that falls away, the mind actually really likes the place of that seclusion from the hindrances. So That's one of the reasons why concentration practice feels so good, and then that stability, that stillness, can get very refined, and quite lovely states can result from that stillness. Mind can get very, very happy doing absolutely nothing, just really staying still. So this is kind of one of the hallmarks of this one-pointed concentration, the stillness, that movement to the pleasurable states. In and of itself, the pleasurable states of concentration, well, they feel really good and they give us a break. I mean, that's one of the reasons why it's helpful. You know, it gives us a break from our minds to experience the seclusion from the hindrances. It gives us a break from the way our minds usually work. But in and of itself, this kind of concentration is not really conducive to wisdom or insight. So that's a place where you know, some people wonder, well, why cultivate it then? Why cultivate this one-pointed concentration? And there was a while in the Vipassana scene that we weren't talking as much about the deeper states of concentration, partly because people do tend to get attached to them. You can kind of get stuck in an eddy in this world of concentration because it feels so good. It's like you get into some of these states, and there's one of the characteristics of the absorption states of concentration that I call the oh yes state. It's just like, why would I want to be anywhere else? It's like, yes. It just feels so good to be there, you know. So it's really easy to get stuck in those states. So it's helpful to understand a little bit of the context, first of all, about why it's helpful to cultivate the concentration and how one can get stuck and where, you know, how to use the concentration that's developed skillfully to move towards understanding and wisdom rather than just simply pleasant states of mind. This is actually one of the hallmarks that the Buddha said about his practice that was different. He said, I can't remember exactly the phrase, but it was something along the lines of, I understood that experiencing wholesome, wonderful states of mind wasn't the end of the path. That wasn't the goal. It was a nice, direction. It gives you a sense that you're headed in the right direction. You know, you're freeing yourself from the habitual tendencies of the mind towards greed and aversion, towards the sense desire and ill will. You're learning how to redirect the attention to create a kind of a more beautiful, wholesome kind of happiness through cultivating concentration, rather than the happiness that just comes from having things and getting things or getting rid of things. That there's a kind of a happiness that comes from having things that we like around us. There's a kind of happiness that comes from having control of our environment. But it's as we get a taste of the concentration, we see actually that that kind of happiness that comes from having things pales in comparison to the kind of joy that comes from the mind that can settle in concentration. And so this is another benefit of the concentration, that it helps us. One of the things that one of my teachers, Tanisaro Bhikkhu, talks about is that practicing concentration kind of gives us a way to move from our world where we're typically clinging on to having nice things around us and getting rid of things we don't like, that kind of typical way that we navigate our lives looking for happiness and arranging the world. It gives us another taste of a different kind of happiness and helps us to let go of the dependence on that more worldly kind of happiness in our journey. So it's a benefit in that way, that it helps us to see that there are other kinds of happiness out there. So then there's also wisdom that can come. The concentration can be used to cultivate wisdom. In and of itself, if you're just moving into absorption concentration, the absorption states themselves aren't that conducive to wisdom. But the practice of concentration, kind of the practice of constructing the state of concentration, most of what we've been doing today, there's a tremendous amount of learning that goes on as we try to do this. So there is wisdom that is cultivated. There's learning, there's understanding. We begin to understand our own minds. We begin to understand the way our habitual patterns pull us out of the present moment. As you continue to try to come back to the breath over and over again, Many of you, I'm sure, saw familiar habits of mind. Particular, you know, some of you may have tended to go to fantasy. Some of you may have tended to go to aversion. So you get familiar with your own patterns of mind as you try to do this very simple thing of coming back to the breath over and over again. And so it's a learning, not only about how your own mind tends to distract itself and create its own difficulties, its own problems, but it's also a learning in how to let go of those habits of mind. Because that's what we're doing. We notice our mind pulled off into fantasy or aversion or some random thought, and the practice is, can I let that go and come back to the breath? So we're learning about letting go of difficulty. We're learning about letting go of habits of mind that tend to cause us struggle. If you notice the kinds of ways your mind tends to go out, you know, it's probably, you know, what you bring into the meditation, the mind that you bring into the meditation is the mind that you live with in your day. So, you know, the fact that you sit down and you notice all kinds of fantasy or you notice all kinds of aversion or greed or pride or self-judgment or whatever your favorite things are for your mind to do, you know, those kind of things are what's happening in your daily life as well. It's just kind of highlighted here because you're trying to do this very simple thing of coming back to the breath. So you really get an education into your own mind by doing this very simple practice of coming back to the breath. So that's one way that wisdom and understanding and insight can be cultivated through this practice of concentration. So while the absorption states themselves are not terribly conducive to wisdom, the practice of creating those states gives us a lot of information about our minds. And also, the other thing that I've seen in my own experience is that this practice of concentration gives my mind a really good education in cause and effect. That seeing, for instance, the whole learning and understanding about relaxed attention as opposed to gripped attention. Now, that was a really clear understanding about how the causal structure, the conditions that come together to create the concentration have a big impact on the concentration. So you learn a lot about how the state of concentration is put together. So there's a lot of education in this practice of concentration. You don't have to get to the absorption states for this benefit to happen for you. You know, the absorption states, I'm not really describing them, but they tend to be, they're kind of successive levels of deeper and deeper stillness. That's a way to describe the absorption states. They tend to be more and more refined states of bliss, of happiness, of balance of mind. So the mind likes going in that direction, actually. It feels good. The mind kind of naturally gravitates towards the well-being. It feels like well-being moving in that direction. But in that absorbed state, you can kind of get stuck there. And what you find, what you can find in coming out of those states is that, you know, there's not a lot of, you know, it's like you feel so good when you're in there. It's like you think everything is perfect. And then, you know, you come out and it's like everything's just the same as it was. You know, there's not been a real shift of understanding or wisdom that's been gained from moving into that. Those deeper states of concentration. So there's, those states themselves, that stillness of the absorbed states is not terribly conducive to wisdom. But as I said, the going in, there's a lot of learning that can happen, just the creating of that. And if you do happen to get to the place where your mind does move into those deeper kinds of stillness, it doesn't happen for everybody, and it's not necessary to happen. But if you do get into those deeper states of stillness, then there is another kind of learning that can happen as those states end. So that as the state falls apart, you know, which it will. I mean, it's an impermanent state. It's a constructed state. It is created based on causes and conditions, and there's the movement into that stillness. And it will last a certain amount of time before it falls apart. If you can, I mean, the mind that is kind of still in that place of stillness, if you can be opened to the falling apart of that state, rather than bemoaning and bewailing, oh, it's going away, you know, how can I get it back? If instead of that resistance to the state falling apart, you simply are interested in what is it like for that state of concentration to fall apart? There's where a lot more insight can happen. You can start to see what you're looking at there is impermanence. The mind that is that still in those states of the more still states of concentration is in a really good place to be able to see impermanence as that state falls apart. If you can be open to that impermanence. So the turning towards insight when you've been practicing concentration, there's a couple of different just ways to explore that. And again, you don't necessarily have to get to the deep absorbed states to play with this. You might be kind of settling into the rhythm, the flow of the breath, moving into more and more place of stillness. And I have a lot of people that come and say, well, what do I do with this? You know, it feels really good, but what do I do with it? A helpful thing to do at that point is, when you feel like you're ready, turning towards change. Turning the attention towards changing experience. You can do that in a couple of different ways. One of the ways you can do that is if you're paying attention to the breath and there's breath sensations happening, you can start noticing more detail about the breath. As I mentioned earlier, We're not looking at the detail as we're moving into concentration. We're kind of ignoring the detail in fact. We're more kind of looking at just the surface of the breath and not all the little changing dynamic experience that makes up the breath. But you can make a choice at some point. If the mind gets to a place of feeling pretty steady, pretty stable, you might choose to turn towards the changing nature of the breath. That begins to open us into insight. It begins to open us into the place of seeing how things are impermanent, unreliable. When the mind is more concentrated like that, it can see just how quickly things are changing. It's quite... It can be quite unsettling, actually, to see just how quickly things are changing. And the mind that has been settled in concentration has a little bit more balance to be able to meet the rapidly changing nature of experience. But it can be a little unsettling turning towards change after having been practicing with the stillness, the peace, the blissfulness of the concentration states. So you can turn towards the changing nature of the breath, or you could simply open to a wider sense of changing experience. For some people, that may be easier than others. So that would be more like opening to the fact that there's also sound happening. There's other body sensations happening. It's more just kind of noticing, and what's happening now? What's happening now? What's happening now? What's the obvious thing that's kind of coming into being now, now, now? That can really get to be, that can feel very unstable after having been in a kind of secluded place of stillness and calm, to have that sense of, wow, things are just changing. So part of the benefit of having practiced and cultivated concentration is that you can begin to learn the skill of going back and forth when the mind has had its fill of changing experience. It can take a break. You can go back, practice some concentration again. And that, again, that cultivates, that kind of hones the edge of the mindfulness. It allows the mindfulness to be able to see more clearly. And it also gives you a break. It gives you a break from when the mind begins to experience the dynamic nature of experience, it can get reactive. And so the hindrances can come back in. We can look like, I don't like this. This is chaotic. This is crazy. And we start reacting to the feeling essentially of being out of control. Feels like, I don't have any control over my experience. And so, we can play with that. Play with, can I be with that? Can I learn how to be at ease with this flow of experience? And if it gets to be too much, we can take ourselves back to concentration for a while. So the point of cultivating concentration, it's got a lot of different sides to it. I mean, there's the way it helps us to settle our minds down, what we learn about our minds in the process of settling our minds down. It can give us a break if we are in a difficult space and we want it can give the mind a kind of a sense of refreshment to move to the concentration if we have some skill with that, some facility with that. And it, the concentration also makes the mindfulness, when we turn from paying attention to just one thing to paying attention to changing experience, it makes the mind, the mindfulness, able to much more clearly see the changing nature of experience, which then leads us to understanding how, with that experience changing that dynamically, you see very, very clearly that there's nothing to hold on to. There isn't anything out there that lasts more than a split second. Now, trying to hold on to things is a futile endeavor and will just create suffering, because whatever we are holding on to is vanishing as we already are trying to hold on to it. So we really begin to deeply, deeply understand the unreliable nature of experience. That there's nothing out there, no experience out there that's going to do it for us in terms of what's going to make me happy. We tend to think some experience or other will make us happy somehow. And if it's not this experience, then it's the next experience. And if it's, you know, this experience for a little while, well, then there'll be another experience. But we just get, we get tied into this cycle of trying to find the experience that's going to do it for us. And this seeing our, the changing nature of experience with that kind of clarity, it just tells the mind, it really gives the mind an education that there's nothing to hold on to. And so the mind really starts to let go, really starts to let go of the ways it grasps, the ways it tries to control, the ways it tries to create, construct happiness, the way it tries to figure out how to hold on to things. We also begin to see in this whole seeing of how things change and are unreliable, the other thing that we start to see is what we take to be who I am, what we take to be me, what we take to be myself, is simply a dynamically changing, flowing experience with no stability in it whatsoever. So this is the other insight that begins to really lead to freedom. Because so much of our suffering has to do with believing that I can somehow control things, or I need to have people think certain things about me. I need to have people view me in a certain way, have people have a certain opinion about me. So it's so much about our identity. So much of our struggle and suffering in life has to do with wanting certain identities, wanting people to have a believe that the identity that we want them to believe, that that's who we are. If you actually look at your how you suffer, a lot of it comes from the ways we cling to identities and the ways we hope that other people will mirror those identities for us. You know, it's not enough that we have it ourselves. We have to have other people say, yes, that's who you are. And, you know, other people's opinions aren't so stable. So so much of our suffering comes from that belief that we have to have these identities. And what this exploration begins to point out is that, you know, the thing that we think of as who I am is not what I think it is. It is just such a dynamically changing experience. And again, it points out to us there isn't a lasting, stable identity here. There are simply processes that come into being and fall apart and come into being and fall apart. Here's the Andrea that's teaching right now, and that'll fall apart. And then, you know, there's a different Andrea that comes into being. I had a really clear example of this. Some of you I know have heard this story. I was on a retreat and I was caught in a story. There was this person in the, this was on a 3-month retreat, and there was a person in the morning question period who I really was annoyed with the questions he was asking in the morning question period. And so I was having arguments in my mind with this person. You know, this was, I spent a good deal of my time on this 3-month course at one stretch, you know, arguing in my mind with this guy. And I saw this. I could see the argumentative self. I could see the self-righteous, I know that I'm right version of Andrea coming up. And I could see that I was suffering around it. You know, I could see that. I could see all of that. And I was just practicing, noticing it, noticing that version of self being there, but still seeing I was a little caught by it. And at one point I was doing walking meditation outside in front of IMS. This is at the Insight Meditation Society in Massachusetts. I was doing walking meditation, noticing all of this, being caught by this story of this identity, this argumentative, self-righteous person. A big, loud, noisy truck drove up, the delivery truck drove up. And it, like, the brakes squealed and the door slammed and the thing, you know, the back, you know, slammed open. It was a, like, clash, bam, battering noise. And what my mind did with that, I mean, kind of surprisingly, when I look at my mind, my mind went something like, it's a truck. Wow. I turned from a 40-year-old argumentative, self-righteous person into a 2-year-old like that. You know, it was just so clear the shift of identity that happened in that moment and how that the identity that was born around the truck had nothing to do with the identity that was born around the stories of arguing in my mind. It had no relationship to one another. So we can really see this as our minds get more settled, more concentrated. And we see how the attachment to our identities is pointless. You know, the ways we struggle, the ways we suffer over our identities, it's pointless. So the point of cultivating concentration isn't so much the pleasant states themselves, although they can offer some relief, some refreshment. But it really is the clarity that comes, that the joining of the concentration with the mindfulness, those two together are what allow us to see really clearly and open us up to the wisdom, the deep transformative wisdom that the Buddha offered, the deep seeing into impermanence, unreliability, not self.